Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. This past week has been one of the outstanding time frames, time periods, in a long time. Things happen every week. We live in a world that's all confused, all screwed up. Many bad things happen, some good things. But this week, it just was spectacular. Some things had a finality to them. Some things were right on. Other things were needed to be said and were said. For example, President Obama's eulogy at Reverend Clementa Pinckney's service on Friday. Absolutely outstanding. I can't describe how outstanding it was. And then we had we've got Greece. Oh, my God, what's happening in Greece? This past week and yesterday and even tonight. Tonight in Greece is gone. It's because Greece is 7 hours ahead of us. It's about 2 in the morning there, 4 in the morning. But what happened tonight in Greece is outstanding. And then the two Supreme Court decisions last week of consequence, one saying, hey, Obamacare is okay, and the other saying same-sex marriage is constitutional. These are big things, and I hope I get the time to cover all of them tonight. I want to start with the eulogy, President Obama's eulogy. I've already told you. It was outstanding. I cried. And I got to tell you, I have to believe that many people who watched it cried. You had to be hard-ass Republican, okay, far to the right. If you did not, or a Fox person, not to have said this is one of the greatest orations a president has ever made in the history of this country. I enjoyed watching the president also, as I indicated a few seconds ago. This was his church. He was in his element. He knew he had all the moves, and he even talked like black ministers on occasion are known to talk when they're in the pulpit. About 75% into the show, into the eulogy, I apologize, he just automatically, as part of his presentation, as part of his speech, as part of his address, as part of his eulogy, the president started singing Amazing Grace. And everybody sang along with him. It was so dramatic because Amazing Grace is the song of the black church. It is the black church's spiritual. It is the song of hope and redemption that they sing. And he did it. He led it. And everyone joined him. So let me talk about Amazing Grace. For some reason, over the years, Amazing Grace has motivated me. I don't know why. But this is the 7th time in 7 years that I will be referring to and describing in detail Amazing Grace. I first did it 7 years ago. I wrote an article for for Amazon Kindle. And then along the way, I did a TV show, a whole hour on this 3 or 4 years ago. I wrote it up in Conch Life on 2 occasions. I used it as a column, different time frames because it fit. And I'm using it here tonight as part of this show. And I'm going to basically go through what I wrote because all of us have to know what it really means, Amazing Grace, not only to black people, but to white people, because all of us have been to some sort of service for someone who has passed on, and we have heard it sung, whether it's a black church or a white church or a multicolored church. So let me start this way. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see. Was blind, but now I see. There is a story that goes with these beautiful words and the song from whence they came. It starts with slavery. Most are unaware that the founding fathers of our country dealt with the issue of the importation of slaves to the United States in the Constitution. Article 1, Section 9 stated, in effect, that the government could not ban the importation of slaves for at least 20 years. But after that, they could, and they did. Why such was placed in the original Constitution is not certain. I suspect that the founding fathers, most of whom were slave owners, were of the opinion that 20 years would give them enough time to propagate, make babies, additional slaves. Since slaves had a significant monetary value, and one's worth was often measured by slaves owned, it made sense that there had to be a time when no more would be permitted entry to the United States. An overabundance of slaves could conceivably diminish the value of each slave. 20 years passed. The Congress could not wait to pass a law banning further importation to the United States. They did it 1 year early in 1807. Thomas Jefferson was president at the time. He is also considered the father of the Constitution. He supported the proposed law and did not hesitate in signing it. The law went into effect January 1, 1808. From that day forward, the United States Navy was on the lookout for any ships that were attempting to bring new slaves to American shores. The Navy was kept busy. Slavery was a big business. It took, though, until 1862 for the Navy to finally eradicate the problem. Although the final three slave ships were captured in 1862 when the Civil War was already 2 years old, their capture had nothing to do with the Civil War. It was the result of the continued enforcement of the 1808 law. The last three ships captured were the William, Bogota, and Wildfire. The demand for new slaves, however, was overwhelming, especially in the 1700s and first half of the 1800s. They were needed for work in North and South America. It is estimated some 12 million were imported during those years. Cuba was in need of a great number of slaves. The sugar fields needed workers. It is estimated at least 100,000 slaves were delivered from West Africa to Cuba. Slaves had to be replenished. Most of the slaves delivered were young, teenagers. They did not live long. They were literally worked to death. The need to replenish drove the slave industry. John Newton was a slave trader. A bad guy in his early years, very bad, mean. He was known by people acquainted with him as a despicable person. On one of the trips across the ocean, Newton and his ship engaged a violent storm. Newton thought he was going to die. We all go to God at some time. He learned to pray. He asked God to save him. God did. Newton continued as a slave trader for a few years. However, his conscience was now bothering him. He quit his chosen profession and went to theology school. Newton became a minister. In 1779, Newton wrote Amazing Grace, not as a musical piece, not as a song, but rather a poem. His congregation would recite, not sing, the words at services. The poem continued to 1835. At that time, someone put it to music. There was an English tune, New Britain. It became the melody for Amazing Grace. Prior to the 1960s, American Grace had no particular popularity except in the black churches. It became a song of hope and redemption, an African-American spiritual. Then came the civil rights movement of the 1960s, the marches, the boycotts, the assassinations. Amazing Grace gained national prominence and popularity during that era. It also became a top-selling recording. Willie Nelson, Elvis Presley, and Tennessee Ernie Ford all recorded it. So did Althea Franklin and Judy Collins, and most recently Susan Boyle. Amazing Grace's history began with the United States Constitution, the Law of 1808, John Newton finding God, someone putting the words to music, and finally the Civil Rights Movement. Today the hymn is sung everywhere, both for the living and the dead, warm and uplifting. as it was, warm and uplifting, as President Obama led the congregation last Friday in singing Amazing Grace. Which now brings me to Greece. Greece, it's time for a Greece update. The default in Greece has occurred. Today was the day, understand, it is not Tuesday in Greece, it is Wednesday. It's 4 o'clock in the morning over there. The money had to be paid today, or the deal had to be made. Greece did not pay. They are in default. And here's what's happening. I could be wrong. I think there is a split coming. I think Greece is going to say, up yours. We can't make this payment. No matter what we do, you're imposing restrictions on us that we can't handle. We've had enough of it. And we're going to walk. And whatever happens, happens. It can't be any worse than it is now. And whatever happens, happens, okay? The president called for a referendum this coming Sunday in Greece as to whether the people wanted to go with the Euro Union deal, which would put the screws to them even more, or they wanted to walk out of the Euro Union and do whatever they thought had to be done. Both situations have significant consequences. Last night, there was a demonstration regarding the issue, and tonight there was another demonstration. The purpose of last night's demonstration in the square in front of Parliament was for the people who wanted to leave the Euro Union. Estimates are that 10,000 people appeared at the demonstration and said, "We're ready to walk out of the Euro Union." Tonight was for the other side, and guess what? There were more than 10,000 people who want to stay in the Euro Union. Interesting. I didn't think it'd fly that way. All right? And I'll tell you why. It's very simple. I saw this firsthand. I experienced this firsthand. I've been to Greece several times over the last few years, and I can remember not the first trip, the second trip, maybe the third trip. I talked to everyone in Athens, in the islands, the affluent islands, the poor islands. I like to know what's going on. I just enjoy sharing things or learning things from these people. And it seemed to me, as this problem regarding the euro was developing and Greece was getting persecuted and prosecuted and beat to hell, the poor people wanted out. They didn't care. Down with Merkel, screw Germany, screw the Euro Union. We're not going to take this anymore. The poor people, I'm talking about the cab drivers, the people working behind counters in department stores, waiters and waitresses, musicians playing in various bars and nightclubs. They wanted out. This is a bad situation. It was a mistake for Greece to go into it. On the other hand, when I spoke with people of affluence, people who had money, things weren't easy, but they were surviving and getting along, and they had adapted themselves to the euro. I'm talking about the people that own pretty big businesses, obviously bankers, big restaurants, people like that, hotels. I spoke to people in Athens who were affluent and in Santorini, which is a very affluent island, and those that own the cave hotels and own the big restaurants, they wanted to stay with the euro. Those who had the wine, had the grape fields and were making wine, they wanted to stay with the euro. They were making money. They didn't go down the tubes. They weren't getting filthy rich, but they survived. On the other hand, the poor people, I already told you how the people reacted in Athens who were without. Now we come, Santorini, they had money. There were those without, but the people who had money on the island of Santorini, they were all for the euro. Now I go to Armagos. I spent several months in Armagos, the first time a whole month. There's no one on Armagos. There's no big business on Armagos. There's 1,800 people on Armagos. No one goes to Armagos, okay? I loved it. I was in this little area that had three or four restaurant bars. They were just old. The place was 100 years old. People made their livings. by the sea. They'd go out and catch their fish and sell it to the three or four restaurants. Everything was old 100 years ago. These people didn't want the euro. They didn't want the euro. They did not want the euro. They were hard to talk to, though, because they were afraid. It took me a while to gain their confidence so they would share with me. They wanted to get out because even with their little economy, it was hurting them. But they were afraid if they were talking to the wrong person, it might come back on them. All very interesting, I thought. So you also appreciate Lewis is walking around asking questions and chatting with people, but I had become friends with them over the month. I was the only American on the island for the month. The only American. People used to come to see me. Are you the American? And I learned a lot from these people. So I really thought the affluent people would be fewer in number than those who wanted to get out. I'm surprised at the number result. It means to me there got to be a lot more people making money in Greece than we understand. It's those that are dependent on smaller jobs and government pensions that are hurting. There is a solution coming, I think. This is one that could happen. It may be that they make a deal yet, Greece and the Euro Union, though I doubt it. Greece may go back to the drachma, which was their money before the euro. Or there's something out there, I've only read once, but I get the sense. Russia and China may bail Greece out, not by giving them the money to pay the Euro Union, but bringing them into the fold of Russia and China with a new form of money. China's created this new money that they're trying to get the whole world to use. It'll be a whole new banking situation, and that could very well happen. And let me tell you something, if it does, Putin has won again. This man always comes out on top. It's amazing. We put the screws to him. We sanction him. We're killing their oil business, which is 75% of their gross national product in Russia. And yet he's making deals for oil fields into Asia and China, into India, railroad lines all over the place. He's doing things with Iran. He's entered into a major deal. I talked about it 2 weeks with Iran where they're bartering. But both of them are getting big deals, what they want and what they need for their economies. And at the same time, we're trying to beat the hell out of them with the sanctions. We're destroying them, we're told. But he stands up and fights, and he always comes out on top. I've got to say it. I'm not saying he's good or bad. I'm saying he wins. The guy knows how to win. My friend Anna went to Greece today. She's going to be there for a whole month. She spoke with people before she went. I told her not to go yesterday, by the way. She left today, and she's there. I told her not to go. She telephoned me yesterday. She was going. I said, you're crazy. They're going to have all, you know, what I see on television, people standing in big lines in front of the ATM machines and everything else. There's going to be demonstrations. You're crazy. Stay home. Go someplace else. And she says she talked to her friends on Santorini and her friends in Athens, and they all said, come, there's nothing really going on here. So she went, and she telephoned me today, and she emailed me once. She said, there's nothing going on. she says, no one is in front of the ATM machines. She didn't see the demonstration because she was tired and went to bed early, the demonstration tonight. It's business as usual. No one seems concerned about this whole thing. And when she left the airport, instead of taking a cab, why she did this, I don't know, she took the bus. A bus ride is 2 hours to downtown. She's at a hotel within a block of Parliament. It's a two-hour ride. Cab's an hour and a half. A cab's 45 euros. I don't know how much the bus is. I'm assuming it's very cheap compared to the 45 euros. They would not take her money on the bus. Anyone coming out of the airport who appeared to be a tourist paid nothing. And she said, I got to pay. And the bus driver said, no, we are happy that you have come here for your vacation. Terrific. So everyone's trying. What bothers me is I don't think we're getting the news about Greece straight when we look at the television sets and what we read here. And this is a problem I always have with the media. I don't think they report things properly. And if you really want to understand what I'm talking about, go to Canada sometime for a couple of days, or go to London and read their newspapers about what's happening here or in the world. And it's so much different from what we read in our papers and hear on television. Anyhow, Anna's going to be my correspondent in Greece for the next month. She's there. She understands. And she'll be reporting in on these things, and I'm glad to have her there. I'll tell you this. I wish I was in Greece right now. This is history in the making, what's happening in Greece. Do you realize if they pull out of the Euro Union, it could be the beginning of a major recession in Europe? It might take a year to hit or 2 years. It will destroy the Euro Union. Italy, Portugal, Spain will follow Greece and say, up yours, Euro Union, we're not going to pay you either. It is. It's history in the making. In which way do these countries go with Russia and China? Do they make it on their own? It's fantastic, absolutely fantastic. It's an exciting time. Which now brings me to Walmart. Has nothing to do with Greece. Has nothing to do with Amazing Grace. Walmart takes a beating, and properly so. They pay their employees niggardly wages. All they're concerned with is the bottom line profit. I do believe they provide clothes and food very cheaply to their customers. And, you know, if you haven't got a buck, paying $3 for a T-shirt or $3 for a pair of shorts or a pair of pants, and being able to buy your groceries at about 40 or 50% less than you can buy them anywhere else, in today's economy, it's a boon for those who shop there. Many people disagree with me. You should not shop at Walmart. I don't. I went once. I got chastised. I wrote about it in the blog. You know how many people wrote and said, you should be embarrassed to say you shopped at Walmart. So it was in Miami. Be that as it may, let me tell you what's going on with Walmart. Walmart is into tax havens. Obviously, they're a major United States corporation. Right now, Walmart has $76 billion, that's right, $76 billion, in 78 different tax havens in the world. $76 billion in 78 different tax havens. And as a result of doing this, they have saved, tax-wise, $3.5 billion over the past 6 years. They would have owed taxes. I know the numbers don't seem to blend, but this is what the report indicated. They saved $3.5 billion over a six-year period. That's still a lot of money, $3.5 billion. Now, out of fairness, let me say this too. Walmart does pay taxes in the United States. Last year, Walmart paid in income tax to the United States $6.2 billion. Now, that's a lot of dough, $6.2 billion. And that $6.2 billion represented 2% of all corporate income tax collected by the United States. So on the one hand, they're doing their thing for God and country. On the other hand, they're trying to save a buck. So I don't know if we really should condemn that. No one should have the availability of a tax haven. These corporations should not have it. They should have to pay like everyone. But they want to save a dollar. What are you going to do? I don't know. Keep in mind, last year, Walmart paid $6.2 billion. General Electric paid nothing. So we've got to say, you know, Walmart is trying, I think. They still want to save a dollar, and that is business. Two of the decisions rendered by the Supreme Court last week, one involved Obamacare and the other same-sex marriage. Very big week for President Obama, a very big week for liberal America. From my perspective, the court approving Obamacare solidifies the program for a long time. It'll be here 50 years from now in some fashion. Social Security started in the mid-30s. It wasn't like it is today, but it's still out there and it's better, and Obamacare is going to go that way and improve. The possibility of cutting its head off is gone. It's a fait accompli. It is a reality. What I don't understand is these people now who are running for president or trying to run for president on the Republican side and some congressional people, they're saying we're going to repeal it next time. We're going to repeal it. They're going to repeal diddly dip. It's there. Put your time and effort in something else, like money for roads and schools, et cetera, so people can get back to work, a better wage for the working class, et cetera. The other thing is same-sex marriage. I never in my lifetime, I got to tell you something, thought this would ever happen. Even 10 years ago, I said, geez, my gay friends are crazy. I could not conceive of gay marriage being considered proper, legal, constitutional. And here it is. And with that decision by the United States Supreme Court last week, it is here for all time. And it means equality for everyone. And I think this is terrific, absolutely fantastic. But there are going to be issues ahead. This is where the war is going to be waged, not really with Obamacare, with same-sex marriage. And it's going to be from the far right, from conservative America. And their concerns, let's look at it. Abortion was legalized 50 years ago. We're still fighting the abortion issue in this country. And what about voting rights, part of the civil rights movement in the 1960s? What are we fighting about the past year? The Republican state legislatures and the United States Congress are trying to take away, and the courts are supporting them in many instances. This is what I cannot understand. To make it harder for poor people and black people to be able to vote, which I believe is wrong. So we're waging that war, and this is 50 years ago also. Now, what's going to happen with same-sex marriage? The thing that hits me in the face right away, I'm a Catholic. I'm a poor Catholic, a fallen away Catholic. But I can see right now, is a Catholic priest going to be required to marry two gay people, two people of the same sex? It is obviously going to be against the concepts of his religion. Same thing with a Christian minister. This creates a problem right there. So now we're going to have a lawsuit. I can see them coming, more than one. On religious grounds, the priest, the minister, can't do this. Let me tell you what I think. Many of you are going to disagree with me. If you have a license to marry people, and even a priest does and a minister, then you've got to fulfill the obligations of that license. There are no deviations. There are no exceptions. Otherwise, don't marry anyone at all. It's a blanket situation. You cannot pick and choose. I don't think a religious exception applies here. Think back when John Kennedy ran for president. The country was fearful. He was going to be the first Catholic president if he was elected. He would owe his allegiance to Rome. And boy, it was tough for him to get over the religious issue. But he says very calmly, listen to me. My religion and my duties as a public servant are separated. That's all. I will not let my religion affect my judgment in doing what should be done for the country. And he did it, and he did it properly. Unfortunately, he only lasted 3.5 years, but he did it. And that's the way it has to be here. If you're going to be a judge, if you're going to be a county clerk or a city clerk, if you're going to be a minister or a priest, and you have a license to marry people, you will marry everyone, regardless of sex. Otherwise, you should not hold the office or maintain the license. Well, that's my show for this week. I'm glad I got this much in. I didn't think I would. I have some more goodies here, but there is no time left. Thank you for joining me tonight. I hope you enjoyed my dissertations here. I know not everyone agrees with me, but I appreciate the fact that you all tune in and listen to me. Join me again next week. I will be looking forward to talking with you again. This show, as you know, because many of you listen to this as it's archived, is available on Block Talk Radio, YouTube, and it can be found every day on my site, KeyWestLew.com, KeyWestLew.com, where my blog appears every day. There's a link to this show. I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. If you like my show, buy the book. If you don't even consider buying the book. And if you like the show and haven't bought the book, go order it. It costs 99 cents on the internet, or $3.99 if you want soft cover delivered to you. Thank you again for joining me. Look forward to being with you next week.